Good evening. If you would go ahead and turn your Bibles to Daniel chapter 5. Daniel chapter 5 is where we will begin in just a moment. For those of you who are aware, I've been noticing this here. We're going to be continuing to preach whenever I speak on Sunday nights through the book of Daniel. And when I get the opportunity to be able to do so, I like to give you an outline. And so the outline is in the bulletin today. It's on the back there. But that outline is actually only for the first little part of the lesson, just to help get you started, to show you some of the things that's neat about this session of Daniel that we're looking at tonight. And so we'll get through that part of the outline real fast. Don't think the sermon's over that early. I think so. We just have to hang on for a little bit more after that. Chapter 1 of Daniel begins telling us and teaching us that God is in control of nations and man's abilities. And some of the songs that Jamie led for us definitely reflected on that well. And you may have noticed a phrase throughout some of those songs, the Ancient of Days. We'll come back to that phrase in a little bit, but all the songs are reflecting this idea of God being in control of the nations and man's abilities. The next six chapters of Daniel, after that Daniel chapter 1, have a literary art to them. And part of this is because Daniel's chapters 2 through 7 are, in the original, they're written in Aramaic, not in Hebrew. And so there's been a question sometimes about why did he go to Aramaic with these chapters here? These, depending on how you want to count the stories, five or six stories, why did he set these five or six stories apart in this way? And the reason we say five or six is that some people count what we might call two stories, they count it as one story. Okay? So these five or six stories that are in Aramaic, right in the middle of almost everything being Hebrew in the Old Testament, these chapters, Daniel chapters 2 through 7, really stand out to you. Then when you add to that, that there are parallels. Now, I'll try to decide how to best reflect this on a PowerPoint screen. I use color on the bulletin. Color doesn't always work great in PowerPoint, so I hope you can see this here. Chapters 2 and 7, look at the similarities. Y'all know these stories well, right? The four-part statue that is blasted or obliterated by the divine stone. The stone that was cut not with human hands. That means it was a divine stone, right? No hands cut it out. God sent that stone down. We covered that one in the sermon on chapter 2. And then chapter 7, we're going to cover tonight. Not a four-part statue, but four beasts that each pass away. And in the end, the saints reign with one called like the Son of Man. All right, so we'll come back to that. See those similarities between 2 and 7. You also see similarities between chapter 3 and chapter 6. So you see we're moving in towards the center. Chapters 3 and 6, you have the three friends of Daniel plus the one, right, in the furnace, in the fiery furnace. They were spared from all that destruction. They were brought out of that evil, that persecution. Well, the parallel there, chapter 6, is Daniel being spared in his own furnace, not a literal furnace of fire here, but the furnace of the lion's den. We know that story well. So chapters 3 and 6 go together. And then here in the middle, chapters 4 and 5, Nebuchadnezzar turns into a beast. And then chapter 5, Belshazzar has his last feast. Some make those two men come together with one story, which is how you would get your 5 instead of 6. We're treating them, of course, as two separate stories. Even though I think they are connected. What you'll notice then about these parallels, as you see here at the bottom of the screen, and this is how you can fill out your outline, chapters 2 and 7 that have those similarities, they both teach that nations rise and fall, but God's nation is indestructible. Nothing comes along and obliterates the divine stone. And in the true story of chapter 7, the saints reigning with the Son of Man, they reign forever. Like that kingdom we just sang about, that it will stand forever. If you're in the kingdom of God, you're part of a kingdom that's never going to get wiped out. We need to make sure we understand how to identify that kingdom correctly. Not as a nation of earth, a nation of men, but the nation of God. Chapters 3 and 6 both show that God's ability is that one of God's abilities, he's able to powerfully deliver us from evil. We have to be careful with that phrase. When we were in chapter 3, we talked about this. Not that he never lets evil happen to us, but that once we end up in the evil, once we end up in the persecution in this case, he's allowing the persecution to happen, but he can deliver us from that. We don't ever need to find ourselves in such a pit that we think, well, I'm in such a mess now, God can't help me. That's not true. God can help you no matter what pit, no matter what furnace, no matter what den, no matter what fire you're in, God can deliver you from that evil. And then in the middle here, chapters 4 and 5 remind us, as we're going to look at in a moment, that remind us that God will humble arrogant leaders. Leaders come in all shapes and sizes. Leaders of the HOA, to leaders of nations, to leaders of our businesses, to leaders of our family, fathers, grandfathers. We all come in contact with leaders who can be pretty arrogant. And we can wonder, what can I do to humble? Well, we ought not try to humble. Trust God to do the humbling. And the humbling may not happen on our time scale. It may not even happen on this side of death, right? But every leader will have to face the humility of judgment if they've led incorrectly. And those who've led with humility can face that judgment with confidence. So instead of doing a sermon on these next each of these next three chapters, 5, 6, and 7 that we haven't done yet, we're just going to overview all three of them here tonight. Daniel 7 is harder to follow, so we won't read the whole entirety of 7. Daniel 6 is so well known, we won't say as much about that because most of us have heard sermons on that one. We're going to focus really on chapter 5. Even though each one of these chapters really deserve its own lesson, that's what our plan is here for tonight. And to make up for the last classical piece of art that I used with the humility of chapter 4 that people were a little disturbed by, Blake's great in sculpture and wood, I got Rembrandt for you this time. See, this is Rembrandt's 1635 depiction of Belshazzar's feast. It's an excellent here depiction to think about what it was like that time they're having this feast. We're going to talk about it in a moment. And then the handwriting on the wall. And that's where that phrase comes from. That phrase, we often refer to that, the handwriting on the wall, it goes back to it, or originated here in this story that we're going to look at this evening. So Daniel chapter 5, we're going to read verses 1 through 16 as we begin here looking at this great story. Belshazzar the king held a great feast for 1,000 of his nobles, and he was drinking wine in the presence of the 1,000. When Belshazzar tasted the wine, he gave orders to bring the gold and silver vessels which Nebuchadnezzar, his father, had taken out of the temple, which was in Jerusalem, so that the king and his nobles, his wives and his concubines, might drink from them. Then they brought the gold vessels that had been taken out of the temple, the house of God, which was in Jerusalem, and the king and his nobles, his wives and his concubines, drank from them. They drank the wine and praised the gods of gold and silver, of bronze, iron, wood, and stone. Suddenly, the fingers of a man's hand emerged and began writing opposite the lampstand on the plaster of the wall of the king's palace. And the king saw the back of the hand that it did the writing. And the king's face grew pale, and his thoughts alarmed him, and his hip joints went slack, and his knees began knocking together. The king called aloud to bring in the conjurers, the Chaldeans, and the diviners. The king spoke and said to the wise men of Babylon, "Any man who can read this inscription and explain its interpretation to me shall be clothed with purple and have a necklace of gold around his neck and have authority as third ruler in the kingdom." Then all the king's wise men came in, but they could not read the inscription or make known its interpretation to the king. Then King Belshazzar was greatly alarmed. His face grew even paler, and his nobles were perplexed. The queen entered the banquet hall because of the words of the king and his nobles. And the queen spoke and said, "O king, live forever. Do not let your thoughts alarm you or your face be pale. There is a man in your kingdom in whom is the spirit of the holy gods. And in the days of your father, illumination, insight, and wisdom, like the wisdom of the gods, were found in him. And King Nebuchadnezzar, your father the king, appointed him chief of the magicians, conjurers, Chaldeans, and diviners. This was because an extraordinary spirit, knowledge and insight, interpretation of dreams, explanation of enigmas, and solving of difficult problems were found in this Daniel, whom the king named Belteshazzar. Let Daniel now be summoned, and he will declare the interpretation." Then Daniel was brought in before the king, and the king spoke and said to Daniel, "Are you that Daniel who is one of the exiles from Judah, whom my father the king brought from Judah? Now I've heard about you, that the spirit of the gods is in you, and that illumination, insight, and extraordinary wisdom have been found in you. Just now, the wise men and the conjurers were brought in before me that they might read this inscription and make its interpretation known to me, but they could not declare the interpretation of the message. But I personally have heard about you, that you are able to give interpretations and solve difficult problems. Now, if you are able to read the inscription and make its interpretation known to me, you will be clothed with purple and wear a necklace of gold around your neck, and you will have authority as the third ruler in the kingdom." We're going to stop here right now to notice some data points. Here are a few things we need to notice. Did you notice what utensils they're using? They were using utensils from God's house, the holy instruments that were to be in the temple. They're misusing them. Notice there. Also, the queen. The queen, she had learned from the past, but Belshazzar has forgotten the lessons from the past. So she comes in and tells him, you need to think back to what used to happen. And furthermore, what we see in his own words is he's only heard of Daniel. He's not making use of Daniel. Now, each of these three data points right here alone offer lessons for us. I'm going to pause and do before we continue the rest of the story. First of all, we need to be careful that we're not guilty of arrogantly misusing the holy things of God. It's easy to think, well, we can't do that because we don't have holy objects. We don't have a temple. We don't have those kind of utensils. You know, we have other kinds of holy things. What are our bodies? We said they belong to God. How are we using them? And right, the sins on this one can go in so many different directions. The danger is I list one, and you think, oh, good, he didn't list mine. I'm exempt. Listen, a lot of us can be misusing our bodies with the way that we work, with the way that we maybe indulge with drugs, the way we engage our sexual temptations, the way that we eat, the way that we sleep. There's so many ways to misuse this incredible body that God has given us. But it's not just that. There's another body, right? The temple. It's the church. His church belongs to God. And there are fellow parts of the body, fellow living stones, fellow members and saints that we can abuse and misuse. We can treat them lightly. We can miss the point of David's lesson this morning and actually think that somebody, some people here are nobodies and treat them like nobodies. And that'd be wrong. Everyone's important. Well, Paul said in Philippians chapter 2 that difficult challenge of consider others as more important than yourself. So we can abuse God's utensils. Not the actual mechanics of the temple here like they were doing, but we can do it in our own way. And we can do this because we haven't learned from the past. So we need to learn not from our own mistakes, but learn from the mistakes of others. History can be a great teacher to help us avoid these mistakes. And finally, we must do more than hear of God's solutions. We must come to know them. We need to know the Word. We need to know His Son. We need to know our fellow saints. And then we need to actually do more than just hear about them and know them. We need to use them. We need to use them. It's easy to say, yeah, I've heard about the church. Yeah, I've heard about Greg Watkins. Yeah, I've heard about Lauren Green. But until you actually know them and interact with them and use them, they're not really offering you the support and the encouragement that you need, that we need. I keep saying you, but it's we need. This wasn't in my notes. I thought about making my introduction, and I didn't, so I'm going to go ahead and do it now. Is that risky, Larry? It is for you, yeah. I heard the kids all think that you have a problem with getting knocked underneath the table at Thanksgiving meals. I don't know why they think that. As I sat here and watched, and I know that they would be embarrassed to death, and they're going to all hate me for this, and I'm probably kicked out of the special meal that I was trying to organize with them. As I sat here and looked at Tom reading the scripture, and Larry and Greg in front of me, and Aaron's post about how many church members have helped their son through what he's going through, it felt so special. You know what I'm talking about? These guys were, there's Marines, several Marines here, more Marines in this church than I think I've ever known that existed than Marines in the church. And they've been such a support to Colin, especially that Greg did there, secretly flying out to photograph those moments his family. As I saw these three standing before me, I'm thinking about how they've helped the Sloan family in gold. Know your people. We have such wonderful people here that it's important not just to know them, but then use them and be involved and interact. So thank you, brothers, for that encouragement you provided all of us. And let's make sure that we don't just hear about these people, but actually, we all need to benefit from. So then the second half of this, let's finish out the rest of this incredible story. Daniel's then advice to him beginning in verse 17. So then you answered and said before the king, keep your gifts for yourself or give your rewards to someone else. However, I will read the inscription to the king and make the interpretation known to him, O king. The Most High God granted sovereignty, grandeur, glory, and majesty to Nebuchadnezzar your father. Because of the grandeur which he bestowed on him, all the peoples, nations, and men of every language feared and trembled before him. Whomever he wished, he killed. Whomever he wished, he spared alive. Whomever he wished, he elevated. Whomever he wished, he humbled. But when his heart was lifted up and his spirit became so proud that he behaved arrogantly, He was deposed from his royal throne, and his glory was taken away from him. And he was also driven away from mankind, and his heart was made like that of beasts, and his dwelling place was with the wild donkeys. He was given grass to eat like cattle, and his body was drenched with the dew of heaven until he recognized that the Most High God is ruler over the realm of mankind, and that he sets over it whomever he wishes. Yet you, his son, Belshazzar, have not humbled your heart, even though you knew all this. But you've exalted yourself against the Lord of heaven, and they have brought the vessels of his house before you, and you and your nobles, your wives, and your concubines have been drinking wine from them, and you have praised the gods of silver and gold, of bronze, iron, wood, and stone, which do not see, hear, or understand. But the God in whose hand are your life breath and all your ways you have not glorified. Then the hand was sent from him. And this inscription was written out. Now this is the inscription that was written out. Many, many tekel upharsin. This is the interpretation of the message. Many. God has numbered your kingdom and put an end to it. Tekel, you have been weighed on the scales and found deficient. Peres, your kingdom has been divided and given over to the Medes and Persians. Then Belshazzar gave orders, and they clothed Daniel with purple and put a necklace of gold around his neck and issued a proclamation concerning him that he now had authority as the third ruler in the kingdom. That same night, Belshazzar, the Chaldean king, was slain. So Darius the Mede received the kingdom at about the age of 62. Again, three things here to notice about the second part of this story. First of all, typical of Daniel, his gentle redirection. Stop looking at me. Don't think this is me. You need to look at him. His response is not mere correction. He's tactful oftentimes with the way that he's correcting us. I have a lot that I can learn from him on this. His response is this gentle redirection to God Most High. We need to learn this skill in helping others, crafting how it is that we're going to answer and help redirect others. And so remember Daniel's earlier answer in chapter 2, verses 27 through 30, where he said, God is the one who makes it known, not me. I know that sometimes it may be awkward for some people when they first get to know my struggle with the conversations that happen after sermons. People come back, oh, good lesson. I struggle with that. I don't know if anybody's noticed that. Because what I want to be able to say, I don't want to be rude and not take the compliment well, but I want to deflect like Danny and say, God gave me an easy message. God gave me a good message. I don't want to say easy message. God gave me a good message. What preaches is God, not any great skill of mine. And so if some way you before have come back there and you've seen me stumble and stutter and not know how to respond, if you've been one of the rare ones to give a compliment, I kid. It's because I want to make sure you understand. I don't think there's anything special in you. What's special is I've been given the best story ever to tell. It's the story that God wrote. So I want to make sure he gets all the glory. We've got to learn that from people like Daniel. Now, as for that mysterious handwriting, many, many tekel upharsin, right? This is God's message. Time is in his hands. Many, many tekel upharsin might literally be translated number, number, weighed and divided. And so what it means there is that your days are numbered, that they've been numbered out, they've been weighed and divided out. And so the handwriting is on the wall, that God is in control. And he controls the timing of our days. If you're like me, it's easy to get impatient. Sometimes we must wait. What makes this easier? You say, now, it's hard to wait on God. I would agree with that, it's hard to wait on God. So what I'll try to give you to be helpful with that is remember how trustworthy and reliable God is. When you're trying to trust this time, you have to remember, he is more reliable and more trustworthy than anyone else you've ever had to wait on. And he's worth waiting on. So trust him and remember that he's in control of the time. And be careful going to advisors who don't give God the glory, who may want to try to rush things and make timing in their own hands. And then, why did he only offer third in command? This is probably my favorite part of this story. Belshazzar, used to be doubted historically. There were no records of him aside from this ancient document. So critics would oftentimes say, oh, look at this story here. It's all made up. We don't have record of him historically. Well, as usual, given enough time, give people enough time to dig around in the dirt over there and find things. And it's not always in the dirt. Sometimes it's in the basements of church buildings. I wonder what we have hidden in the attics here. Go check. Give people enough time, and the Bible was confirmed. In this case, there are three historical sources. The Cyrus Cylinder, and a document called the Verses of Nabonidus. And in the Nabonidus Chronicle, that's a third different source, the Nabonidus Chronicle says that the king, his father, remember the queen referenced that, your father, the king, his father, was away in Tamar. He was in self-imposed exile. And this would have happened. Therefore, then, Belshazzar was a sort of fill-in king, waiting for his father to return. So in the initial reading of this, he'll be third in command. You might be saying, that's odd, and it fits exactly what history has now told us was going on. This guy was just a fill-in king who was throwing this huge feast. Father never made it home from the self-imposed exile in Tamar. So that's why he was offering this third in command. Now, I'll say one thing else about this. In practical application for this odd little historical confirmation of Bible stories, even those who are second in command can be corrupt with pride. He wasn't the ultimate leader. His father was really the ultimate leader. But look what had happened to him, right? He had begun to think, yeah, look at me. We're going to have this big old feast and use these temple items and just do whatever we want because dad's not home. He left me in charge. But be careful with that. It just reminds us that anyone can be proud. We're not going to get carried away with our second-in-command status, whatever that might be for each one of us. So it's a great story, Daniel chapter 5, and then we come to Daniel chapter 6. Daniel spends the night in the lion's den. By this time, Daniel's a much older man. His habits are long established. And so as we said in chapter 3, private practice prepares us for public proclamation. He has become such a legendary person that Darius knows him well. And so when the men trick the king and trap him, listen to the king's reaction to this trapping. We're going to begin reading here. This looks like a typo. Let's begin reading in verse 12. And that would be a little bit of a long reading, so bear with me. Sorry here. Daniel chapter 6, beginning in verse 12. Then they approached and spoke before the king about the king's injunction. Did you not sign an injunction that any man who makes a petition to any god or man besides you, O king, for 30 days, is to be cast into the lion's den? Then the king replied, the statement is true, according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which may not be revoked. Then they answered and spoke before the king, Daniel, who is one of the exiles of Judah, pays no attention to you, O king, or to the injunction which you signed, but keeps making his petition three times a day. Then as soon as the king heard this statement, he was deeply distressed and set his mind on delivering Daniel. And even until sunset, he kept exerting himself to rescue him. Then these men came by agreement to the king and said to the king, recognize, O king, that it is a law of the Medes and the Persians that no injunction or statute which the king establishes may be changed. Then the king gave orders. Daniel was brought in and cast into the lion's den. The king spoke and said to Daniel, your God, whom you constantly serve, will himself deliver you. A stone was brought, laid over the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet ring, and with the signet ring of his nobles, so that nothing would be changed in regard to Daniel. And then the king went off to his palace and spent the night fasting, and no entertainment was brought before him, and his sleep fled from him. Then the king arose at dawn at the break of day and went in haste to the lion's den. And when he'd come near to Daniel, he cried out with a troubled voice. We'll come back to that in just a moment here to see what the result was. I think most of us already know, but I want you to notice this. Darius knows how faithful of a man Daniel is. It's interesting here. It seems like the king's night was worse than Daniel's night. Have you ever noticed that? And so the king then does that crying out in verse 20. He cried out with a troubled voice. The king spoke and said to Daniel, Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you constantly serve, been able to deliver you from the lion's den? Of course, yeah. And so an application for us here, this issue of constant service. Constant service convicts others and overcomes any challenge in faith. There's so much more to chapter 6 we could read. I love the confession. If you've never read it before, listen to what Darius says in verses 25 to 28. Go home and read that. And see how this constant service of Daniel convicted the heart of a powerful king to change what he believed about God himself. And so then we'll come to chapter 7. The four fantastic beasts. It's another interesting story, and you can really get the Cliff Notes version of it by just reading here verses 15 through 18. Let's go ahead and get that before you. It says in Daniel chapter 7, verse 15, "As for me, Daniel, my spirit was distressed within me, and the visions in my mind kept alarming me. I approached one of those who were standing by and began asking him the exact meaning of all this. So he told me and made known to me the interpretation of these things. These great beasts, which are four in number, are four kings who arise from the earth, but the saints of the highest one will receive the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever for all ages to come." Now look at this. Daniel's just been told this, right? These are four kings. They're going to do all this, but in the end, you guys win. Now, I don't know how you would respond to that. I think I know how I would respond. A lot of times I think that I wouldn't respond as well if I actually got put in this moment. I think I might have been happy. Heard that and been like, oh, okay, good. Go do something else. But that's easy to say, it's hard to live by. And so in this moment, Daniel realized, his perception was, "You told me I would win, but wait a second. I want to hear more about that beast." And I think that might actually be how, if we were in the moment, we might also respond. I mean, think about these beasts. This is not a classic picture. I was surprised, you can't find any famous depictions of Daniel chapter 7. So you have to settle for some cartoon images somebody's made on your computer. This is a pretty good one. I think this reflects pretty well what some of the beasts look like according to the way the word pictures that Daniel describes in Daniel chapter 7. So if you find these pictures interesting, I welcome you to go read it at home and try to make your own depictions. See if you can make your own little Bible, perhaps, if you like to do art. And this is what happens. We can focus on the beast. This is what Daniel did. Look at verse 19. He said, "Then I desire to know the exact meaning of the fourth beast, which was different from all the others, exceedingly dreadful, with its teeth of iron and its claws of bronze, and which devoured, crushed, and trampled down the remainder with its feet. And the meaning of the 10 horns that were on its head, and the other horn which came up, and before which three of them fell, namely, that horn which had eyes and a mouth, uttering great boasts, and which was larger in appearance than its associates." You know, I have to say, I think if I were there in that moment, I too might be wanting to ask about that horn. Tell me more about the horn, the teeth, and the mouth, and eyes, and he's talking, he's making other horns fall over. "I kept looking, and that horn was waging war with the saints and overpowering them, until the Ancient of Days came and judgment was passed in favor of the saints of the highest one. And the time arrived when the saints took possession of the kingdom." I think what can happen here is that it's easy to fear the beast in our life. It's so much easier to be focused on these beasts. Yours don't look like this, but you have them. Co-workers. Neighbors. I hate to say it, sometimes, sadly, for some people, it's their spouses. Or it's their children. And sometimes what can happen is you can become so understandably focused on this beast. Look at this beast that I got to face in life. And it's a dreadful beast. And so the reminder of this chapter is, stay focused on the Ancient of Days. Stay focused on where it's all headed. These beasts are going to be wiped out in time. But not the Ancient of Days. And so let's read a little bit more about the Ancient of Days. Let's back up to verse 13. "I kept looking in the night visions, and behold, with the clouds of heaven, one like the Son of Man was coming. And he came up to the Ancient of Days, and was presented before him, and to him was given dominion, glory, and a kingdom, that all the peoples, nations, and men of every language might serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion which will not pass away, and his kingdom is one which will not be destroyed." Here's the good news. That the Ancient of Days is God, and he's delegated to his Son all authority forever. The one like the Son of Man is the one that we ought to be more focused on. The one like the Son of Man is also the highest one that we read about in verses 27 and 28 of the same chapter. You look at verse 27, then the sovereignty, the dominion, those are the things we were singing about with the great songs that Jamie selected earlier. The sovereignty, the dominion, and the greatness of all the kingdoms under the whole heaven will be given to the people of the saints of the highest one. His kingdom will be an everlasting kingdom, and all the dominions will serve and obey him. If you haven't figured it out by now, the one like the Son of Man refers to Jesus. Because Jesus repeatedly claims this title throughout all the Gospels. You can find it in Matthew chapter 24, and again in chapter 26. You can find it again in Mark chapter 13, and chapter 14. You can find it again in Luke chapter 21, verse 27. Jesus is regularly saying that he is the Son of Man. He's alluding to these passages and others in the Old Testament, but this one primarily probably so. This is the kingdom of the Son that we're in. The kingdom that is greater than any beast, greater than any man-made statue. The kingdom that will never pass away, no matter how much the gates of hell try to fight against. And we'll keep our eyes focused on him and his Father, the Ancient of Days. We can persevere and we can overcome. And we can convict the hearts of those around us. So I want to read with a reading that will echo David's conclusion this morning. Luke chapter 12, verses 4, beginning in verse 4. I'm going to begin with this reading here of what one like the Son of Man said. Luke chapter 12, beginning in verse 4. He said, I say to you, my friends, do not be afraid of those who kill the body and after that have no more that they can do. But I will warn you of whom to fear. Fear the one who, after he is killed, has authority to cast into hell. Yes, I tell you, fear him. For not 5 sparrows sold for 2 cents, yet not one of them is forgotten before God. Indeed, the very hairs of your head are all numbered. Do not fear. You are more valuable than many sparrows. And I say to you, everyone who confesses me before men, the Son of Man will confess him also before the angels of God. But he who denies me before men will be denied before the angels of God. Everyone who speaks a word against the Son of Man will be forgiven him, but he who blasphemes against the Holy Spirit, it will not be forgiven him. When they bring you before the synagogues and the rulers and the authorities, do not worry about how or what you're to speak in your defense or what you're to say, for the Holy Spirit will teach you in that very hour what you ought to say. I want you to focus. There's a lot there that we can talk about in that passage. I want you to focus on the part about confessing the Son of Man. Don't you want, like David talked about this morning, don't you want your name confessed by the lips of Jesus? To be at that great throne room of the Ancient of Days and the one like the Son of Man, and he confesses our very name on his lips. I just can't imagine what that's going to be like, to hear people names coming from his lips, in which he says, this one's mine. So I end tonight with a pretty simple question that I've taken straight from Acts chapter 22, verse 16. Why do you delay? Get up and be baptized and wash away your sins so that on the next judgment day comes, your name will be confessed by the one like a Son of Man, the highest one, whose saints will reign forever. And if you've never made a public confession that you believe in him, you've never identified with him through baptism, putting on the clothes of Christ, we plead with you, we beg with you, and we encourage you to make that first step. When it stands before men and says, I believe he's the Son of God. And he came and he died in my place, took the punishment that I deserve. And be buried in the waters of baptism, and let God raise you up as a new creature so that you can begin walking as a Christ follower, one of the saints. If you've long since been baptized, but you need the prayers of the saints, we encourage you also in the song we're about to sing, to come over and ask for those prayers. So if you would, please do that as we join the music stand and sing.